Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode in the Revis and Butthead podcast, a long-awaited one, that is. It is our new season, season two of the Revis and Butthead podcast, where I am always joined by my co-host, Hussein. Hussein, say hi.
What's up, everyone?
In this episode, we're just going to go over exactly what our thoughts are on the season as a whole, including how the team performed earlier in the year, at the end of the year, and what our expectations are going into next year. And in addition, we are going to talk about what we think about the coaching staff and what we think about Zach Wilson. Up next, stay tuned.
All right.
This is where the intro happens, you know, with the music. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So getting this kicked off, the Jets, man, the Jets started 6-3 on the year. 6-3. They even made it to 7-4, Hussein.
Yeah, this is weird.
Who would have thunk?
This was so weird. It was such a weird year. Like, from start to finish, it was the Joe Flacco game in Cleveland. It was everyone throwing every bet that they would beat Joe Burrow in Cincinnati after the Cleveland game, to Zach Wilson in Pittsburgh thinking he's future quarterback, to running a winning streak, to Zach Wilson getting benched, to Mike White as the future quarterback, to Mike White getting hurt, to Zach Wilson back. Like, it just goes on and on.
It was a true roller coaster. This season was honestly all over the place.
I mean, it's better than, you know, the 2-14 we've experienced.
Oh, it's definitely an upgrade. I mean, this team itself, I mean, you could see from the last 2 years with the additions, it's been a huge upgrade. And
I forgot what heartbreak felt like.
Yeah. And not the, oh, I kind of expected this, but I was trying to stay positive heartbreak. This is the, oh my goodness, I had hope for the first time in probably 5 years and I'm crushed.
This is a, I wanted Buffalo rematch in the wild card and we finished 0-6 heartbreak.
Yeah. It was definitely a stumble to the end. And I don't know if I want to blame it on this, but I do want to bring up this point that I feel like no one talks about. Obviously, I'm not going to put all the blame on this aspect. There's blame to go around everywhere, as we will discuss in the future. But this team is so young. Like, a lot of these guys were in college literally a year or two ago. Right. Like, and especially right. Like the core pieces. And especially with the injuries happening, I think a lot of the young players who are making plays and all that, and I think they just got tired. Like, Michael Carter was a dud this year.
Yes and no. I mean, for one, for Michael Carter, because I actually did want to mention this, he was never the same after he hurt his ankle.
He was
Chicago. So
that's like he a wasn't. Thing. But the NFL seasons are long seasons. And even though he may look good over the first 16 games of his career, it's one off season. Then you're back into thrown back into playing another full season at that kind of toll on your body. I feel like with a lot of the injuries to these young players, a lot of it is just, you're in college and you play what, 10 games max on average?
A little more.
Like, if you're like 12,
like Sauce, Garrett Wilson, those guys who were in the playoffs and made deep runs, they were hitting 13, 14 games of like constant high intensity football.
Yeah.
Like 13, 14. They're playing championship level, like high quality football.
Right. You know? That, yeah. I mean, especially those big schools, you know, the big prospects that we took. But a lot of the players, I mean, Texas A&M, they're not going to the playoffs. But it's just an interesting thing to take into account, at least what I think. Again, like I said, there's a lot of factors. We'll get into the coaching staff. We'll get into Zach Wilson, the train wreck that was. But Hussein, what were your overall thoughts on the second-year players, how they developed or did not develop? And what were your also thoughts on the rookie class?
Yeah, well, if we're going to start with the second year, it was like we were praising Joe Douglas' draft class this time last year. And now looking back on it, it does not look as good as we kind of thought it was. Zach Wilson, miss. We'll get to that later. Elijah Vera-Tucker is an all-pro, so that's like the outlier here. Elijah Moore, trade request, head wasn't in it. I think he finished with like 480 yards and one touchdown. He did not produce the level that, like, everyone had, like, people loved Garrett Wilson. People had Elijah Moore pegged as the Jets wide receiver one this year. That's how high, you know, us, the media, that's how high everyone was on Elijah Moore. So that's disappointing no matter how you peg it. Granted, we thought he was really misused early on. We can get into that, but nothing but a disappointment is the only way you can say it.
Honestly, it's, I feel like the whole Elijah Moore case is just boggling of the mind, because you see that he can separate. He has the athletic traits. He's got, he honestly, at first glance, he has it, but then it's game time and the helmet comes on, the lights come on, you know, CBS is, you know, recording, and he disappears. I feel like I need to go and watch literally all of the All 22 film and see what's up, because I will say there are probably times that he's open and he doesn't get the ball, and we will get into that later. But it's, I've also seen some reps where it's almost lack of interest and, or running the wrong routes. And I don't know if the offense is just too complex, at least in terms of the routes and what the responsibilities or the option routes. I don't know what is taught, but it doesn't look like he's playing fast. It looks like some of these players on offense are second guessing themselves, really, aside from Garrett Wilson, who from honestly day one looks like he's belonged. But it all goes back to up front, in my opinion. And the Mekhi Becton draft pick, I mean, that's heartbreaking. The 2 years of him being hurt.
That entire class is a wash. Entire class is a wash.
I mean, I don't know if I'd call the entire class a wash, because you had, what, maybe three starters out of it? You had Elijah Tucker.
Michael Carter.
Becton's class?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you still got Michael Carter II, and he's
that, no, that was really that good. Was Vera Tucker's class. Becton's class was Becton.
Oh, that was a Davis show. Ashton Davis,
Brandon Mann, James Morgan.
Yeah, I don't. And
Cameron Clark.
Yeah, Cameron Clark was, you know, he's gone from, you know, I think a neck injury thing.
2020 was a wash. 2021 is not looking average at best.
Yeah, 2020 wasn't good. The Becton pick just really hurts. It does. No matter which way you dice it. Now, we obviously don't know how the future is going to look for him. He could come back next year and play all 17 games. He also could come back next year and play like absolute dog water, or he could be injured again all year.
Or he could not play. Like, those are three. He could be an all-pro or never see the field next year, and I would not be shocked at either of those outcomes.
Right, and it just magnifies how pivotal some of these picks were a couple years ago, especially these first round picks where you're going to get your offensive tackle of the future. And it's obviously hindsight being 2020, you know, it's hard to predict injuries, but it just hasn't worked out so far. And all the best that Jets fans can hope for is that he can turn around and he can stay on the field, because it always comes down to availability. We've seen what he did in his rookie year. He was a force, but you got to be on the field. It doesn't matter if you're on the sidelines or at home.
Yeah.
And Ashton Davis, man. I mean, it was funny because
we are not getting into this class right now.
But hold on, was it the Cleveland game where he sealed the? I think he played like one snap or like five snaps or something, and then on the one defensive snap he played, he intercepted the ball, which I thought was funny. But yeah, we're moving on to the actual.
I will say is we kept Ashton Davis so we can cut Jason Pinnock, and Jason Pinnock is starting at free safety for the Giants in the playoffs this weekend. So
yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of cutting someone so young and obviously at a new position. Obviously, hindsight being 2020, you want to have that back.
He was decent at safety last year.
And even Lawrence Cager was playing this past Sunday. with all the backups, and he looked pretty good. But again, sometimes roster cutdowns, when you have a talented roster, you have to make tough cuts. And obviously, I would probably have preferred to have Pinnock over Will Parks at safety.
Yeah. I mean,
Ashton Davis, I firmly believe he was not cut because of his contributions to special teams.
And his draft status. He was a third round pick 2 years ago at that point.
Yeah, that's also a part of it. And we'll get into Braden Mann, but my God, he cannot be a punter next year. We had a better punter on our roster and we cut him for Braden Mann, which is
truly
boggling of the mind.
But one thing I do want to say, I have a bone to pick with this, is today at his press conference, Joe Douglas says they're not in the interest of giving up on their young players, but you gave up on Jason Pinnock. You know, like, what do you mean?
Yeah, it's
a year after you drafted him.
It's tough. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I wouldn't have wanted to cut him. I don't know. It's not a great look. Don't get me wrong. Because obviously, and I'm surprised actually none of the reporters said anything about them cutting Jason Pinnock, especially because the Giants have so much success in there in the playoffs and there.
Yeah.
I believe they're playing the Vikings the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, pretty much.
So at the end of the day, the only thing that could fix this is if you get viable replacements this offseason and all the talk goes away. But for the young players, the actual rookies this year, this was a damn good class. I mean, we finally saw some star power, in my opinion. I mean, Garrett Wilson on offense, that's a stud right there. You can tell this just the way he played, and every time he caught the ball, it felt like you knew something was going to happen, and it did.
Yeah. This time around, again, just because of what happened last year, I'm going to get like too overexcited, but I really think we drafted 3 All-Pros this year. I really think so.
Yeah, I like their chances of their long-term success and future in New York in general, especially Sauce Gardner, my number one favorite player in that draft.
Yeah, I mean,
He's got the sauce, man.
We can talk about him and Garrett Wilson all day. I think Jermaine Johnson needs a bigger run. We kind of saw it the last 2 weeks. He played more and looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Same with Michael Clemens.
I really like Michael Clemens. I think he's got
a strong run defender.
I think he's got a spot on this team. And I mean, speaking of young players still, Bryce Huff, I mean, he kind of had a coming out year this year. I mean, he's always been highly effective in the pass rush game, even a couple years ago, but when he was a full-time player in the year that Greg Williams was the defensive coordinator, you kind of saw that he got a little burnt out in a way. But it feels like his conditioning is starting to improve, and he's starting to actually improve his run defense where he can be a viable, I don't want to say like day one starter on the edge, but he can take a majority of the snaps. And we obviously traded away Jacob Martin. There was no need for him. And I like the four man group of Jermaine Johnson, and we'll get into Carl Lawson, but I still think he should come back. Obviously, I personally, and I know Hussein also agrees with this, that they need to rework that contract. Jermaine Johnson, Clemens, Huff. I think we got a good edge group. I think they could cause some havoc, especially when they can have an offense that can, you know, keep them off the field so they can, you know, catch their breath once in a while. Because I feel like as the year went on, the offense just kept putting the defense in such bad spots every week, every single week.
Every week.
Every week.
Field possession battle.
They would lose the field position battle. They would go on the field and go 3 and out and punt the ball away, or Zach's 3-interception game against New England. They were thrown back on the field several times. And it's tough because, again, it's a young team, and you're stressing your defense so much over the weeks, not years, where you increase the chance of injury because you're more tired, and injuries happen more frequently when your muscles are fatigued. And your performance goes down. And we saw that at the end of the year where the defense started to slip a little bit. I fully believe that's because they were just on the field too much this year. And there's no excuse for only scoring, for not even scoring a touchdown in the last three games. I mean, how can you look at the defense and say it's their fault for losing those games? I don't know. This is arguably, at least in my opinion, at worst, top eight defense.
And it's so crazy because if you go online, people expect they bail out like Zach Wilson in every reason possible. But then
anytime the defense
lets up a first down, basically is not anything other than the reincarnation of the 1985 Bears. They're a failure. They like the games we lost to Detroit. We lost to Jacksonville. In those games, I think we let up three touchdowns. Three.
We did.
In two games at home.
We did.
Lost both games. Like, the defense not underperformed because they let up a fourth and one. But before that, they held one of the hottest offenses to 13 points. Like, you're in that. You let up 19 points to Jacksonville when they were white hot and just beat Dallas. Like, what are you supposed to – I saw a thing today. The Jets' defense in losses averaged 20 points per game allowed.
I did see that. I'm pretty sure 0.5 passing touchdowns per game in their losses as well.
The offense, I think, scored 0.5.
Oh, yeah. The opposing offense scored 0.5 passing touchdowns per game in that loss. You are correct.
It's insane. It's insane.
I mean, that's a championship defense right there. And we're going to hear that phrase tossed around all offseason long. This is a
not without its faults.
It's got its faults. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we still can't stick to a tight end in on passing downs to save our lives. We can't stick to running backs. But and don't get me started on the safety play. I mean, holy smokes. I mean, in one of the games, we were a LaMarcus Joyner poorly played deep ball away from winning a game, and he just botched it. You can't have bad safeties in the NFL, especially when you have two studs on the outside. You have to understand that when you have two studs on the outside and DJ Reed and Gardner, teams are going to put all the stress on the middle of the field. So that falls on the safeties and that falls on the linebackers. And
yeah, I mean, like, who in their right mind would throw at, you know, DJ Reed or Sauce Gardner if you just keep attacking like Jordan Whitehead and LaMarcus Joyner all game? I don't understand how you didn't
plan
around that.
And it's interesting because when we were on our winning streak, do you remember how many times Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed were tested in coverage, especially Sauce Gardner at the end of the games?
Yeah, I think the Denver game, Buffalo game,
he was tested twice. After those two games, teams did not test either of them. What they did was they flooded the middle of the field and stressed the linebackers and safeties in the middle of the field, and it worked.
I also think the big part of that is there's no true ball hawk in the middle of the field. You don't have someone at the linebacker position or the safety position who can really create turnovers, and they're physical and they're fun, but they're undersized. Quincy Williams, like, he's fast. He's not like a huge enforcing type of like size. Jordan Whitehead is 5'8". LaMarcus Joyner is 5'9", like 5'11". They're tiny at safety, and that's why they keep getting beat deep.
Right. And it's you do need some height in the middle of the field because it does help, especially in jump ball situations. So you can actually contest those. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of crazy watching 5'8" DJ Reed contest almost every single receiver on go balls. And
they're do pretty damn well against it.
Yeah. But the difference is DJ Reed is uber talented and uber competitive. Not saying the safeties aren't competitive, but DJ Reed just has that talent to him, and it's just something the safety room does not have. And I find it so fascinating that coming into this year, we knew linebacker and safety were going to be at certain points in the season a problem.
Yeah, I was screaming that for a while.
However, we thought it was going to be specifically in run defense, especially with the linebackers. I feel that Quan Alexander really shored up the run defense. But in terms of pass coverage, CJ Mosley had some good moments, but more often than not, they were kind of getting abused. And I feel like at some points, the Jets were out-schemed. I mean, the Justin Jefferson touchdown against the Vikings kind of is caked in my memory in that second half because they actually let DJ Reed and Sauce switch sides to try and anticipate Justin Jefferson being on the left side of the offensive formation. And that's where Sauce was lined up the next play, because that's where Justin Jefferson was lined up on the last play, but they switched and the defense didn't adjust. Justin Jefferson ran an out route. It was a touchdown. DJ Reed, it was good coverage, but DJ Reed, 5'8" against 6'1" Justin Jefferson, long, lanky. It's tough. I mean, physically, he's outmatched. And a lot of the time, DJ Reed can overcome that against a lot of receivers, but Justin Jefferson is just so uber talented. Not in that case. Now, in that scenario, I'm not saying Sauce Gardner deflects it, but Sauce Gardner's got the length to at least get his hands in there, at least in an attempt to knock the ball away. And there are times where the Jets do seem to be out-schemed. And I wonder if you think or agree with that statement.
Defensively, yeah. People put, like, really in the second half of the year, they kind of put the defense in a blender by attacking the middle of the field, running some zone concepts that worked against us. Like, and just because I'm on this point of physicality in the defense, so obviously Sauce Gardner is 6'3 unicorn. You know who the tallest guy is in our secondary after Sauce Gardner?
Who or how tall?
Who and how tall?
Is he a starter?
Yes. Only starters. Five starters, including nickel.
I'm going to say the tallest person is going to be either 5'10 or 5'11. And I want to say, are you saying opening day starters?
Opening day starters.
I mean, I know LaMarcus Joyner is tiny, so I'm going to have to say Jordan Whitehead.
Jordan Whitehead is 5'10. Michael Carter is 5'10. DJ Reed and LaMarcus Joyner are 5'8.
Yeah. I mean, we certainly need some size.
They need size in the worst ways. It'd be a great year if Kyle Hamilton was a draft prospect, but whatever.
I don't know about you, but I'm kind of happy with Garrett Wilson and Sauce.
Nah, like if he was a draft prospect this year.
Oh,
like if he went back to school for, okay. He went back to school for 1 year.
If only. A man can dream. We will definitely get into the draft prospects in the upcoming weeks and months. But I'm hoping to see some good safety play in this draft. So it's a position the Jets desperately need to address. And from what I've heard, at least, it's a quite lackluster free agency class. So I am not going to really anticipate any huge additions, specifically with the cap situations. You got to open up money for Quinnen.
Yeah.
You got to sign the draft class. There are some factors. The Jets are likely to add in a veteran quarterback. That costs quite a bit of money. So there's factors to go into that. So it feels like the draft, again, is going to be the main mode of improvement. And it would kind of help if Joe Douglas would hit on maybe one or two more free agency signings than he has in the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm. I think it's big for us to really fix safety, but not only fix safety, but get a guy who can create turnovers at that position. Because I think since we beat Buffalo in New York and we had two interceptions against Josh Allen, the rest of the way the Jets defense got one turnover, that pick by CJ Mosley against the Bears. They finished as good as their defense was. I think they were third or fourth to last in the NFL in turnovers this year. They didn't recover any fumbles, and they had 16 interceptions.
I honestly think, and this is going to go into a little bit of the what I think the coaching staff should add, is they need to add some sort of, you know, strip artist specialist.
No, they're fine at forcing the fumbles.
And recovering them, obviously.
Falling on them is the problem.
But they also haven't forced one in the last three games either, from what I remember.
Yeah, they haven't forced one. Like,
they haven't forced one in quite a while.
I think Quincy will force like 3 or 4 last year, 4-0 this year. I don't think the linebackers did not create any turnovers besides that one CJ Mosley pick against the Bears late in a game that didn't matter. You need a difference maker at linebacker and a difference maker at free safety who get after the football. And there are actually some names this year in free agency at free safety. Jesse Bates, Jordan Poyer, Jimmy Ward in San Francisco, so he knows his game, and Adrian Amos in Green Bay.
There are some better
options there.
Remember, some of those guys are going to re-sign. Some of those guys won't hit the market.
Jesse Bates can't be tagged.
He can't be tagged. I agree.
Get paid. So He was tagged last year, remember?
Yeah. Yeah, he was. To be fair, though, Jesse Bates isn't obviously the all-world safety everyone thinks he is.
He would help a lot.
He would help the Jets a lot. Don't get me wrong. But he's no stud. He's not like a Cam Chancellor, yeah, obviously.
He's still a
good safety. And the problem with free agency is everyone gets overpaid. You know, it's really tough. That's why it's a little better to at least use free agency to supplement the players that you at least add. So,
but they need a new linebacker and
they need one safety. Big time.
And I think you have to bring Quincy Williams back just because it'll help Quinn sign too.
I think you do need to bring Quincy back because I feel like even if he's only in the game for like early downs against the running game, he flies around, he can cover sideline to sideline. He's the only real guy aside from Quan, who we don't even know also if he's going to return or not, that has the ability to do that. That's not CJ Mosley's game.
Yeah.
And the defense needs that. And obviously with the brother connection, it's nice to have.
So I've spoken way too highly about Quincy for them to let them go. I'm just a little worried that somebody's going to overpay him because, like, if you look at last year, like, we knew the shortcomings Quincy Williams had last year, right? And he definitely improved on him this year. But, like, on paper, you look at his stats and, like, this dude is one of the best linebackers in football based on his numbers.
He's definitely put up some box
stats. He's a stat padder.
Yeah.
So, last year.
Let's be fair. That linebacker is a very famous position for that.
Last year, his first year as a full-time starter, 110 total tackles, not a small number, 9 tackles for losses, 4 quarterback hits, 2 sacks, 3 forced fumbles, and 5 pass defended. Those are good numbers. Like on
very paper, good numbers.
Obviously, we know what his liabilities were, but on paper, those are good numbers.
Yeah, and there are teams around the NFL that they see a box score and they'll shell out money. I mean, I don't want to call out the Jaguars, but they gave big time money to Aluakun, and he had all those tackles, and it's a team will do it. A team will shell out big money for a stat line like that.
It's easy to justify money based on a box score.
Easily. And look, I'm not saying Aluakun is a bad player or not, but he's not a Luke Kuechly or a type like that that deserves to get a huge contract like that. So it's something to keep in mind. But I do want to switch over back to the offensive line.
Oh, we can make a whole episode on this. I can rant on, you know how I feel about this.
I mean, we talked about this a couple days ago, and this is putting it politely, there are 4 question marks on this offensive line.
I'm going with 5. Truthfully, 5.
4. I'm saying what, 4.
What's your one not question mark? AVT?
AVT, yeah.
AVT's a like pseudo question mark only because any guy coming off season-ending surgery, this has to have a question mark applied to them until they're on the field. And as soon as AVT steps on that field at camp and he's like, I'm healthy, question mark's gone. But as of right now, it is one.
Because
things can go
that.
Wrong in rehab.
Things
can go wrong in rehab. It can get, like we find out with Carl Lawson today. You know, things can slow down.
Which
can go wrong.
Which is fascinating that it wasn't reported until now.
It was shocking.
I mean, how does nobody in the media know that this is going on?
That really changes my opinion of him and what I think they should do with him. But
yeah, honestly, because at first you look at the box score, you're like, okay, this player can rush the passer, but it's kind of average as an edge rusher in the NFL.
He was average. He was average. I still ask him.
And we paid him to be a lot better than average.
I would still ask him to take a pay cut, but
He has to. He can't play at that number.
I try to bring him back, and because Rankins is a free agent, I try to move JFM inside full time, which I personally think he's better there anyways. And let Jermaine Johnson play. Well, it doesn't matter because there is no such thing as full time with this defensive line anyways.
There isn't. There really isn't. So I mean, the only time JFM really kicks inside is on passing downs, which I would get behind.
He didn't that much this year. He didn't kick inside that much. The only time he kicked inside on passing downs, and I think when there was like injuries to like edge players and needed it, when Quinnen went down, they kicked him inside against Buffalo. But
yeah, I mean,
as a pass rusher, he's better inside. It's just a fact of the matter.
I mean, he could use his quickness against the guards who are typically slower. It's a good matchup on passing downs, but he can get abused in the run game and if he's put inside. Runs, I mean,
you run stuffing defensive tackles are cheap.
I mean, I forgot which game it was. I think it was actually the second Bills game where JFM just got annihilated on that one of those rushing touchdowns.
Yeah.
I mean, he just got pancaked. It was no contest. But I'm all for sliding JFM inside, and you have Carl Lawson or Michael Clemens on the other, Bryce Huff and Jermaine Johnson rotating in on the other. I mean, on passing downs, that sounds pretty damn good.
Very good. But let's get back to the offensive line because we got a little sidetracked.
Agreed.
Five question marks, realistically. Becton can't be anything but a question mark. Lake and Tomlinson, we're stuck with you. I'm sorry.
He has been...
Get over it.
He's been honey-nut booty-os this year.
I don't understand how you come from the same exact scheme, playing the top five, top 10 guard in football, and basically play the equivalent of Greg Van Run, except taking $20 million a year from us. The math is... I don't understand. Like, we're missing something.
We even have the same offensive line coach from San Francisco.
And we have Benton. That's why I'm even more confused.
You know what I think it is?
What is it?
It's because he played next to Trent Williams.
That probably helps.
It helps a hell of a lot. I mean, it's so listen, the offensive line in general, it is one of the only position groups that you need chemistry with those around you.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, 100. Yeah, definitely.
Obviously, it's the NFL. People get hurt all the time, and you have to have a next man up mentality. However, if you look at the Jets' offensive line injuries, we had seven different people playing tackle at one point, and it was what, week six?
Yeah.
And then it just got worse. It snowballed down as the year went on because Herbig missed time. Everyone at one point missed time. So in years where you play with the same five people around you, it gets so easy to the fact that when you line up, the person next to you can just tap you, give you a look, and the two of you know what your assignment is, what you two are doing on that play. I mean, that's the offensive line position. It's all communicating. And it's funny because you watch TV, you obviously hear nothing aside from really the quarterback and the commentators. The offensive line's either talking or hand signals or nonverbal communication, all of it. And you only got about at best maybe 12, 15 seconds before the ball snapped to look at what the defense is and figure out what your job is, because it's the NFL and your job changes what the defense does. And you know, the defensive tackle's in the wrong gap, so your assignment changes, and all of a sudden this ball snapped and people are twisting and stunting and people are passing others off. And when you have people next to you that you've done it before, you can feel when that person is passing off another pass rusher to you. You can feel it.
Yeah,
but
I agree. I mean,
but there has to
it's
be
also
a balance.
Very easy
there has to
when
be
you're
the next man
next
up mentality.
Williams. Yeah,
I mean that guy's a human bulldozer. I mean, I'm obviously not going to say that I can go in the NFL and play next to Trent Williams and look decent, but having an all-pro tackle next to you definitely makes you look better. I mean, look at Connor McGovern this year. It was a night and day difference from last year, especially with earlier in the year when he had two competent guards next to him.
All right, so we all know what a dumpster fire Lake and Tomlinson's been early on, but there is still three other positions on the offensive line. Connor McGovern is a question mark because right now the Jets technically don't have a center on their roster. He's a free agent. He's not a question mark if he comes back, but as of right now, that position is. AVT, we talked about it. Question mark until we see him healthy on the field, whether it be OTAs or camp, but he's a question mark until we see him healthy. We really liked Max Mitchell this year, but he dislocated his knee and then got a blood clot 6 weeks later. He's a question mark, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. I mean, he had his struggles, but he did look good at times.
That's 5 out of 5. We're basically just praying that Dwayne Brown retires to save us $18 million, and then we draft, hopefully, Paris Johnson in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, one of these tackles early in the draft would be nice. And obviously I'm going to do a very, very deep dive because I know Hussein does not like watching offensive line play all that much. If I'm nice, I will let him watch along with me so I can teach him.
I'll kind of do.
I can be kind only sometimes.
But let's start talking about the coaching staff because there is a lot to talk about with the coaching staff.
Yes.
Let's start with the elephant in the room. What do you do with Mike LaFleur? Obviously, we're recording this on Monday night. Robert Saleh said he's not made any decisions yet. What do you do with Mike LaFleur?
What I would do is I wouldn't fire him. I would hire an older senior consultant who's done it years before, who knows the system.
Gary Kubiak's name is all over Twitter.
I was just about to say Gary Kubiak is littered on Twitter from all the reporters and all of the other Jets fan Twitter accounts. They love Gary Kubiak and they should, honestly, because he knows the Shanahan system. He's coached it. He's been a head coach at one point. He's run several offenses with several different playmakers and different star power at different positions. So I think they need a senior voice in that room. And whether it's Kubiak, if they can get lucky enough to get Frank Reich, they got to get someone
as an offensive assistant though. I would love him. He's an offensive
I would say it's highly doubtful that he would take that kind of a position, but you need someone who's done it before. I mean, Mike LaFleur, and you need an experienced QB coach. You can't have Rob Calabrese, which look, you can have him as like a young assistant coach and, you know, you bring him up and develop him as a coach, as you know, in that coaching pipeline that you hope to establish one day on the coaching tree. But you can't let him be the big dog on a young coaching staff with a young team. It's just not going to work. And reflecting back, Greg Knapp's loss was heartbreaking, and it was it unfortunately was a big impact on this team.
Bigger than we thought it would be.
Bigger than we thought it would be, because he was the big experienced voice in that offensive coaching staff room. So they need to find someone that can fill that role this offseason. That's my biggest. Yeah. That's what I would do if I was in charge. And I'm curious as to what you think and what you would do.
Okay. So before I even get started, I have a huge bone to pick with like Mike LaFleur this season. It's like once Breece Hall got hurt, he just shelled up. It's like, I think Breece Hall was kind of hiding the fact that Mike LaFleur was not the best play caller. I think his schemes are great. I think when he chooses to call them and his inability to be malleable is a big issue. My big things are, I sent you this before, the Jets run empty more than any team in the NFL.
And they suck at it.
They're the worst team in the NFL in yards per play in terms of running their empty. We saw yesterday, Detroit on 4th-and-1 with the game on the line, ran empty for like the first time all game. You know, you have to pick and choose. It's like his red zone is like Ask Madden. His red zone plays consists
It's horrible.
Of inside zones, wide receiver screens,
running back screen that gets blown up for a four yard loss.
For some reason, a design touch for Braxton Berrios. It's like,
oh my gosh. The one beautiful play he designed, was it the Buffalo or Viking game? It kind of bleeds.
The Viking
together.
Game. The angle.
The Viking game. Oh my goodness. The motion, the that was return, his best. Everything was great. And they had Braxton Berrios executing it. It's just,
yeah.
You want to put your best player doing that.
Have Elijah Moore do that.
Have Elijah Moore do that. Exactly. It's mind-boggling.
And it's like, do you know what the best part of the Jets offense was before Breece Hall got hurt?
What's that?
The two running back formations with Breece Hall and Michael Carter in.
Yeah, the Jets were running a lot of that wing T motion and wing traps. And it was freaking killing it against the Packers when that play was supposed to be a pass play. Remember that pass play that was a busted play and the whole Packers team was behind Breece Hall as he ran in for a touchdown?
Or that against Miami when Breece Hall had that like 90-yard catch, he got tackled at the one. That was a two-running back set. But like, I don't like, I understand nobody is mitigating a loss of Breece Hall, but you had Ty Johnson on the roster. You had Bam on the roster. You just traded for James Robinson with still having Michael Carter. You did not have to completely abandon the two back set because it gave your offense a lot of diversity, and he abandoned it.
He abandoned it altogether. Without good reason, honestly. And I don't know if he felt that he didn't have the speed to run that kind of motion with other players. Like, Ty Johnson's fast.
If you're as good as a play caller, as a schemer as you think you are, Breece Hall going down should not completely change the way you call plays.
No, it shouldn't. He shelled up, I mean, I could kind of understand too, because around that time is when Zach Wilson started to absolutely crumble. And as you're calling a game and your quarter and people are open, your quarterback throws three interceptions on those plays where there's touchdowns open. I mean, it's hard, but I'm not defending him, but it does change your strategy with what you're working with, because Breece Hall was a home run hitter and everyone knew that. Everyone did. And he truly was the home run hitter we needed out of the backfield. It all fell apart.
It seemed he never schemed to player's strengths. It's like, this is my scheme. This is what we're doing. You have to fit it. You know, that's what it felt like.
It's rigid. It's very, very rigid.
He dies on hills. He dies. Lakin Tomlinson was terrible in wide zone concept blocking. They kept running wide zones to Lakin Tomlinson's side. If something doesn't work, he doesn't change it. He keeps going with it until it's going to work.
At the end of the day, it's just not good enough. And it got quite irritating, because over the last couple of weeks, you know, in the press conferences, all you hear is Michael Floor, you know, the responsibility falls on me. I got to do better. 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 But it doesn't, like, nothing changed over those weeks.
Nothing changed.
It meant nothing. And it's a broken record at a certain point.
Yeah, so
he's got work to do. He's a young play caller. He needs a senior guy in that room to help him out. And also, something I want to add, situationally, he sucks.
Terrible.
Sucks.
Terrible.
He can script some drives together that end in touchdowns, and some of those scripted drives look incredible, but you get to the situations where it's like fourth and one, and the guy's running empty. You get to you're at third and four and he's running the ball. And you're punting after. I mean, if you're running the ball on third and four and you don't get it, you better freaking go for it. Especially if you're across midfield. And that's something I also want to talk about the coaching staff. This coaching staff has got to grow a little bigger pair of balls and start going for it on fourth and down when they cross midfield.
Yeah.
I don't want to see Greg Zuerlein kicking 55-yard field goals all the time. All the time. The man is like 36 years old. He's got a big leg, yes, but 55-yard field goals, like, holy. It's not good. And some of these decisions are not fundamentally sound at times. And it's kind of bothersome, because they were also issues last year, which during our winning streak, it looked like they were mitigated and they started to be addressed. But then it's like almost they fell back into bad ways again, partially probably because the offense was sputtering so much and they couldn't do anything on offense. I'm not saying that didn't have anything to do with it, but it wasn't enough. It wasn't good. Mike LaFleur has to be better situationally. He has to understand the situation. And man, can we go for it sometimes when we cross midfield on fourth down? I mean, my goodness. How many times
go for it and not run empty?
Right. And how many times did we see a team do that to us on defense where they got past midfield and it's fourth and one? I mean, the Bills game, for Christ's sakes, just put the offense out there and try to draw them out off sides. I mean, it's frustrating is what it is.
You know, another thing that Michael Floor is really bad at?
What's that?
Opening drive scripts, game scripting.
I don't think there was a single opening drive touchdown this year.
One. Mike White.
Oh, there's one?
One.
Yeah, you're right. It was one.
You know how many touchdowns the Jets had in the first quarter of the season?
Probably like four.
Two.
Yeah, even worse.
Two worst quarter touchdowns all year.
The Jets have been a team this year to start slow in games.
Yeah, they, even the defense starts slow in games too.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a team as a whole, and that's kind of on Saleh, but
I mean, the defense I could kind of understand because defense, it's more reactionary. It's not, you're not driving in a sense. So you have to react to what the team's doing to you. And, you know, if the team does something completely out of your game plan, you got to obviously adjust. But offense, man, I mean, you're driving the ship, dude. Like, everything's at your disposal.
Yeah, but for what I would do is I think I agree. Keep LaFleur on staff. Hire a real offensive mind to be assistant like Kubiak. Hire a real quarterback coach and run it back. Unless you can, like, convince Frank Reich to be your offensive coordinator, convince Cliff Kingsbury to be your offensive coordinator. If Miami goes, like, all world on fire and somehow fires McDaniels, convince him to be your offensive coordinator, even though he'll probably get a head coaching job somewhere else. Like, you have to remember that the grass isn't always greener.
You're exactly right.
You need to have a real, justified, better backup plan. You can't just fire Mike LaFleur for the sake of firing Mike LaFleur and replace him with someone worse. That's not solving anything.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you said that because I'm so sick and tired of seeing all the knee-jerk reactions that people have. And I can understand, you know, it's emotional. It just happened, but like you said, the grass isn't always greener. And the good thing about hiring like a senior offensive consultant is that if Michael LaFleur sputters out of the gate, they could take over play calling.
Yeah.
Can take over. And Michael LaFleur's not fired. You could still keep him and develop him. Just, you know, don't give him play calling duties. Let him observe for a year. Give him the same treatment that some other young players will get when they're benched.
Yeah, and if you're going to fire LaFleur, you have to be pretty sure you can get like Cliff or Frank Reich or a similar like acumen to replace
him. You got to get a big brain in there. You can't just fire him and hire some random guy who looks promising but never really called plays. Like you can't do that. You can't. It's not going to fly. And
that's good.
And another concern about just firing Mike LaFleur and hiring another coach is that you get a new offensive system, more to learn. Yep. Obviously, there's going to be differences in scheme slightly because the different play caller that could stunt some of the young players' development. It's a consideration. It's a very young team, very impressionable, and you don't want to get in the habit of just firing people when there isn't success. That's why bringing in a senior mind is the best option for right now. And if Mike LaFleur shits the bed next year, then you move on at that point because you did everything at that point that you could to give him a successful position, and he couldn't deliver.
Let's move on to our last topic, Zach Wilson.
Zachy Poo.
I'm going to start off with this real quick take. I think he'll be here next year. I think he'll sit behind somebody. It does not make any financial sense to cut him. It does not make any financial sense to trade him before June 1st. I think he's going to be on this team come training camp. And unless somebody blows out their like knee in camp and they need a starter, then they'll move for Zach. But like he's best suited on the bench next year behind a quarterback where he can actually learn. And I don't think Joe Douglas is giving up on him with 3 years of cheap team control left anyways. And this team needs a backup quarterback as it is.
Yo, if he hasn't given up on Braden, man, he's not going to give up on Zach Wilson.
He's not giving up on Zach
Wilson. He's not. Sorry to break it to you guys. It's going to be Jimmy G, Derek Carr. If the stars align, Lamar Jackson and Zach Wilson is going to be riding the bench behind him. So it's what it's going to be. I mean, he's only going into his third year. That theoretically gives you a year for him to sit. And assuming his fourth year comes up and let's say it's a Jimmy G / Derek Carr and –
or it's Aaron Rodgers.
Or it's Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers retires or goes somewhere else after, and it's Zach Wilson's turn. You have that fourth year to say, hey, all right, I mean, we're going to give you competition with someone else in training camp, but if it's your job, this is your time to prove that you are the guy for the year, and if not, we're not picking up your option. And just leave it at that.
Overall, Zach Wilson this year, obviously, is the biggest disappointment. You know, we were wrong. Like
huge
as of right now, we're wrong. Like that's it.
Broken. I mean, you can see it. His footwork is all over the place. His body's not aligned where it needs to be. His eyes aren't in the right spot. His timing is off. He's indecisive. He doesn't throw the ball in the right lanes. It's crazy. It just all compounds in the NFL.
Like, The quarterback that we saw, if he like, if we had the Pittsburgh Zach Wilson, if we had the Miami Zach Wilson, this is an 11-win team. He fell off a cliff.
He did, and it's, and honestly, a lot of it falls on a lot of the offensive coaching because he didn't really have an experienced QB coach. You know, at least at the end of last year, not this obviously past season, but at the end of his rookie year, when his QB coach was in the building, you actually at least saw good fundamentals from him. He may not have made the best decisions or throws, and you know he might have put the ball in harm's way with turnovers, but his footwork was impeccable.
The second half target
for a lot. I mean, and it just it all fell apart this year.
His second half of last year was good.
Structure around him.
Second half last year was good. He didn't turn the ball over in the second half of last year. I think he had like one pick.
He was pretty accurate. I mean, and now you look at what he did this year. He couldn't hit a freaking broadside of a barn with the football. For he couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. He couldn't hit anything.
It's like he fell apart after that first New England game.
Yeah.
They kid gloved him against Buffalo and the kid gloved him against New England. He lost 10-3 and that was just it. Like once you lose to New England like that, you're not coming back.
And I'm kind of curious. I wonder if it's also a part of his personality too, because in the first New England game, he started off pretty hot.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started taking risks and then he started taking stupid risks. And then once those stupid risks turned into interceptions, at that point, his emotional confidence was shot and he just crumbled. And at that point, he never recovered. I wonder if he feels the need to always play hero ball. And that's what the result is.
He throws the pick and then he presses. It happened against the first half in that first New England game was some of the best Zach Wilson we've ever seen.
Yeah,
and then he threw a pick because he like overthrew Ty Johnson because he threw off his back foot on an angle route pick. He fell apart against Detroit. He had a really strong first half in Detroit again, and then he started off the second half with a pick, and then fell apart.
Yeah, it seems almost as if you know they always say you want to have a short memory in the NFL as a quarterback. He
doesn't have one.
He gets eaten alive once he has turnovers.
And yeah, I mean
that's a problem in the NFL because you will be tested. There will be there will be obstacles and adversity that you have to be successful in. He really has not shown any ability whatsoever to combat that and overcome it. And that's just a fact.
Yeah.
That's just a matter of reality at this point, unfortunately. And I was a big Zach Wilson supporter when he was a prospect. Kind of makes me sad to go back and watch his college tape and you see he's stepping it up in the pocket and he's making throws and taking hits. And you turn on the NFL tape and he's running around and throwing off his back foot. And his feet are nowhere near lined up to his target. And it's just not good. It's not good. And
yeah, I mean, we'll get way into him deeper and all the quarterback options probably pretty soon because we're going to need to. But other than that, you can't do anything but call Zach Wilson a failure this season. Everything from start to finish.
Start to finish. I mean, it all started with that dumb play in the preseason where he's trying to extend the play, trying to make a man miss in the preseason. I mean, just go down and slide, dude. You already gained 3 or 4 yards at that point. And it wasn't – I don't think it was even third down. Like, there was no reason to
– at the preseason game, it didn't matter.
At the end of the day, it was a preseason game and – I don't know. Maybe the lack of the preseason and training camp had an effect. It probably did. The coaching staff obviously played a part. The offensive line played a part with all the rotating bodies in and out of the lineup, out of the starting lineup, might I clarify. So many factors into this, just so many. And then you add into the fact that in the middle of the year with the lack of accountability, that was just disgusting. You know, once those words leave your mouth, your teammates lose all confidence in you.
Yeah,
even if you hear some cute quotes from like Garrett Wilson or others, you know the locker room is not going to really play hard for him. I mean, you could even see it. I was at the Jaguars game along with Hussein and Chris, the moment Chris Traveler came in, you could see the offensive line trying to pump up the crowd. And you can tell there was, even for those first couple plays, there was a little more life breathed into the offense, but they looked hopeless when Zach Wilson was under center. And how could they not, with Zach Wilson dirting the ball on 15-yard dig routes and airmailing balls? And the thing that is truly mind-boggling is the fact that he went from one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the NFL, not the NFL, in college, at BYU. And then you've come to the NFL, and he's not only missing receivers, but he's in a different zip code with the ball he's throwing. Like he's not even putting it in a spot where the receiver can dive and make a play on it or extend. It's nowhere near these guys. And I understand why Elijah Moore put in the trade request.
Elijah Moore was right.
No one really wanted to talk about it at the time, but
Elijah Moore may have been right.
He probably put in the trade request because he saw Zach Wilson wasn't it. And obviously all the fans jumped down his throat for, oh, he doesn't want to win and all this. But, you know, if your quarterback doesn't play out the standard, your win streak is not going to last for very long. And that's exactly what happens to the New York Jets. It's exactly what happened. I mean, you got to have competent quarterback play at the end of the day. And yeah. Zach Wilson does not provide even close to that this year.
Yes. I mean, disappointing season overall. Like, if you put in that sort of nutshell, or if you get like average quarterback play, we're not doing a season review podcast right now.
Yeah, I mean, we're probably gearing up for a playoff game at this
point.
We're on PlayStation,
talking about how we can beat Buffalo.
Exactly. I mean, realistically, we were two games away from a playoff spot, and we got an absolute zero from the quarterback position this year. I mean, sure, there was the flash of the pan of Mike White for a little bit, but even then, this team's ready, and this team is young, and you got maybe three, maybe four at most year window to start winning and start to build something. And for the quarterback position to be an absolute zero, it's kind of demoralizing in a way, because you can feel like you're knocking on the door to something and you're about to open the door of opportunity, and it just got slammed back shut in your face because of the miss with the quarterback position.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it missed. You can't dwell on it. Now we just have to move on, right?
Always move on. Always look forward to my favorite part of the year, the NFL draft season, because I'm a Jets fan. I'm a Jets fan, so the draft is my favorite part of the NFL season.
I'm really behind on draft stuff now.
I'm really behind too. I'm usually watching tape shortly after Halloween.
At this point in January, my big board's already like 20 players deep. I couldn't name like 10 players in this year's draft right now.
But don't worry, we will definitely be catching up, and we will be bringing out some top five videos like we did last year, and we'll be giving you our favorite players and how they will fit on this team. Hussein, do you have anything else to say on this pod before we dip out of here?
Trade for Lamar Jackson.
That would be a dream. That'd be a dream. As long as Mike LaFleur will change the offense, that is.
Ah, boy.
That's another conversation for another day.
Another conversation. We can talk about quarterback options for an hour, which we probably will.
We will. With that being said, guys, thank you for tuning in to the first episode of our second season. We hope to see you in our future episodes on this glorious NFL offseason. Other than that, let's get cooking. Peace out, guys.